This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Tanner Pearson drops to Waugh. Long shot stopped by Lankinen. It bounced off Mancini and back into the net. An unfriendly bounce for the Canuck goaltender as he made the initial save but kicked it right off Mancini's leg. And it deflected past him to the right point. Hronek, long wrist shot, redirected, stopped by Hill, loose in the crease. They score! Atu Ratu! He got to the front of the net and scored his sixth of the season to tie the game at two.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Wild Bill Carlson, right wing to the Vancouver line. Forced wide by Quinn Hughes. Carlson center to front. They score! All alone in the slot was Victor Olofsson. And he beats Kevin Lankinen on a clean shooting chance right down the pipe. It's 3-2 Vegas with 3:14 left in the third.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 3-2 on home ice against the Vegas Golden Knights. They open up the scoring in this game. Tie game in the third, but Vegas, they showed their class, took over the game in the second half especially, and come away with the victory. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sath Yarshaw with Bick Nizar, going to bring in Randy Janda into the conversation in a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. I thought Kevin Lankinen gave the Canucks a chance for the most part in this hockey game, and Vegas really showed their class in the second half of this game. I mean, they were utterly dominant in the third period. Despite the fact they played last night in Calgary, they look like the superior team, especially in the third.
8-4 team. What's going on with my mics here the last couple of games, guys? We praised Lena at the beginning of the game that the mic was working. And here we go. I'm here. I'm back.
This is what happens when the boss lowers the bar.
It's
right?
About culture setting. You're absolutely right. Anyways, moving on here. Vegas 8-4 in the second of back-to-backs this year. They've got class. And guys, I think Vancouver, they tried their best. They've, you know, fought hard. There was a certainly, you know, the rink was tilted, right? Like This was for the majority of this game where you look at Ozone possession time. Vegas had a pretty big advantage in this game. And you're right, Kevin Lankinen played a strong game. I thought Vancouver tried to simplify their game, tried their best to keep Vegas out of the danger areas, but that is one of the best teams in the league, in my opinion. I think they're going to be a contender. I think they'll be right there, one of the last teams, but this was a team that just knows when to turn it up. I think there's some really good things for Vancouver and some of the young players, but when you're talking about a different class of hockey team, the Vegas Golden Knights are one of the top in the league, and that really showed late in that game.
Yeah, I just felt, especially in the second period, they started to lean on Vancouver. Was it you that said that they had a 13-pound edge per average?
Yep. On same Vancouver? Height, but heavier, yep.
Yeah, and in that second period, it really felt difficult for Vancouver to generate any sort of puck possession with speed through the neutral zone. And even the contested plays felt like they were going 75-25 towards Vegas. And then the third period, I mean, how many shots did Vancouver end up having in that third period? Three? Two. And you just see the difficulty in gaining offensive zone possession, and most of that comes through the neutral zone. And there were moments where Vegas essentially three guys down the middle and just compressing the space, and Vancouver just relegated to, all right, I'll just flip it high to the other side, and weak side D-man just goes and collects it, and away they go. And it was tough sledding for Vancouver up the ice in the second half of the game.
I thought Vegas did an excellent job also. I'm not sure where he finished, but Ozone possession time for Quinn Hughes way down compared to what he usually does. In the third period, I think there was a couple of moments, maybe a couple of shifts that was raised. But, guys, he led everybody in puck possession. But when you look at the offensive numbers compared to what he usually does, not as strong. And I think a lot of that had to do with Vegas sending two guys his way and really shutting down the neutral zone to him so where he wasn't able to access that. So, overall, like when your best puck carrier is not able to carry that puck and create for you, because of the game plan on the other side, it's always going to be tough.
40 seconds for Quinn Hughes, offensive zone possession time. That's usually well over a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Quinn doesn't look like himself. We can tell. Like, doesn't have the same pace to his game, and he's not going on his edges as often. You can tell that, you know, obviously he says he's 100%, but the visuals tell you otherwise when you watch him play. But we know the Canucks and the Vegas Golden Knights are in two separate classes. And, you know, the disappointing part of this season is the Canucks heading into the year, the expectation was they would be fighting with the Vegas Golden Knights for a top spot in the division, top three spot in the division, right? So in this year, Vegas is not only one tier above, there are several tiers above where the Vancouver Canucks are. And, you know, the Canucks went from being close to where Vegas was to all of a sudden seeming like they're miles away. And I think nothing personified that more than the third period in this hockey game.
For sure. And a part of that, guys, I think when we had those comparisons in the preseason was a lot of that was center depth. The Vancouver's 1-2 punch before the season started was high end in Vegas. The guys, the four centers that they have there tonight, and remember, Tomas Hertl is not even playing. They're going to pop, you know, Brett Howden down the lineup. They'll have one of their centers play on the wing. This is the strongest center group in the Western Conference, if not the league. And that really speaks volumes about where the Canucks are currently. They're searching for answers. You've got Elias Pettersson injured. You've got Filip Hedl. You have Suter, who started off the season being a third option, really elevating his game and now having to play those first-line duties. So, yes, no doubt those comparisons, we can go back to the beginning of the year, but this is a team that's in transition in the center position, and the best teams are built through the spine of the, you know, the spine of the team, right? The center position and defense. And I think with Vegas, you know, you got to tip your cap to George McPhee and McCrimmon, who do a great job of being aggressive every year, but it also does show Vancouver where if you want to be a top contender, you want to go there against the Winnipeg Jets, the Dallas Stars, and the Vegas Golden Knights. You got to build a team that can compete with this. And, well, and that's the long-term vision, right?
The spine and the fours, but the defense.
Sure.
They move. They are huge. And they make the simple stuff clean, right? I don't look at Nick Hague and expect end-to-end rushes or anything like that, but he doesn't overcomplicate things. Zach Whitecloud, I think, is extremely efficient as a player and probably one of their better skaters. As well, but look, they got Shea Theodore, Petrangelo, Hanifin, Whitecloud as a third pair, as you said in the pregame show. It just looks very ruthlessly efficient. Like, if you go through the first period, the Canucks probably had six chances overall. Vegas probably had three, and they scored on two of them. And it's a sentiment that you know, Yannick Hansen always says with us on the People's Show in Canucks Central. It's you take a certain class of player and they might need four chances, whereas the best just need one. And that really felt evident in the first period, just how seamless some plays were for Vegas to get those two goals.
Well, on those two goals you mentioned as well, there was net front scrambles for the Canucks right before both of those transition attacks. So talking about, you know, playing a team that's comfortable playing that style where they're saying, all right, we'll deal with it. We're not going to panic in this defensive position. You maybe have us on the ropes a little bit, but when we get the puck, it's going down the ice immediately. And they had the green light early in that game. Once they got their legs, Vancouver, you know, those two goals are a classic example of from defense to offense, it's immediate. It's immediate. There's always a green light there. And that goes to, you know, their star players. You can have controlled exits from Jack Eichel, but there's another play, a hard rim around the boards, and the forwards know where they need to be. There's always, like, you know, I remember a quote from, I believe it was Jim Rutherford, when he took the job, saying, you want to be in a position where the game is predictable and every player knows where they want to, need to be. Vegas is that right now. Vegas is a team that it feels like they're just so cohesive. And even though there might be moments in the game where they eat pressure, every player knows where they need to be next. And I think that's, you know, it's tough to play a team like that. Even though they might have played last night, might be a little tired, when you're so stuck to your staples, they're going to find ways to beat you. And that's exactly what happened tonight.
Yeah, I mean, just a superior opponent. Now, you know, Corey says, don't give Vegas so much credit. The Canucks don't have anywhere near the same talent. They have no bite. True. I mean,
we just talked about it. Their center is missing, right?
No doubt. And but it's true. Like, there's a big difference in personnel, especially up front. But as far as what happened in this game, and what we're seeing now is a bit of a youth movement. Now, Jonathan Lekkomäki didn't play in the game, and fans wanted to see him play. We all want to see him play. But they had five other rookies essentially playing this game. DPD, Mancini, Carlson, Ratu, and Max Sasson.
Yep.
And Atu Ratu has shown a lot of good things, but he's also shown, you know, there's things he has to work on. And when you're playing these young guys, and it's good that they're getting experience, you're going to see some good, you're going to see some bad. And he was so good in scoring his goal, going to the net and doing a lot of good things, and then completely loses, I wouldn't even say loses all those things, just stops skating on the play that leads to the game-winning goal. And that's what it's going to be like with these young guys in the lineup. They're going to make some mistakes, and the hope is you'll learn and you get better. But you know, this is going to be part of life when you're trying to incorporate more of these young guys into the lineup.
Totally. There was a lot of good with Atu Ratu. Even before the game, or sorry, before the goal there, he was, in the first period, had a couple of shots on goal, forced quick reaction saves from Aiden Hill, where he wasn't hesitating. He was leaning into those shots, finding the soft area. And I like that, where he's not handling or overhandling the puck. He ends up getting that goal, crashing the blue paint. But you're right. You know, on that play, maybe he's just kind of gliding back a little bit. Carlson attacks the right-hand side of defense, and you have to get back there, right? Kiefer Sherwood is a little bit further up ice. He's taken another man. You have to get back. That is your guy. So that's going to happen, right? There's going to be a steep learning curve. You're playing some of the best players in the Western Conference. Beyond that, though, I thought Elias Pettersson has had some really good moments. There was a net front battle. I believe he knocked Tanner Pearson down to the rear end, kind of like a Adam Foote style kind of box out. Yeah. That was good. Mancini had a rush going up the ice from the right-hand side where he was handling the puck. It looked like he was all by himself and, you know, was able to attack that empty space and create a chance. So you're going to have moments like that, good and bad, for the rest of the way when you throw these guys in the deep end a little bit. But are they showing you something every single game? And I think that's the key. We were very positive last game with Max Sasson and others and Linus Karlsson. I think there were certain elements for both of these, the three players I mentioned as well in this game.
You mentioned Elias Pettersson there. I thought he had a totally fine game.
No, he was good. Yeah.
And I look at it, and it's 11 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah.
And like I'm left wondering why it's only 11 minutes for a D-man. Yeah. I just don't get it.
Well, especially like that play on the 2-on-1 with Brandon Saad. Like there was flashes of, okay, this guy's looking comfortable. I'm surprised because obviously during the game, you keep an eye on ice time. That one I lost track of. It just felt like he deserved more.
Yeah, it felt like he was noticeable in 11 minutes and 33 seconds. And the Ratu, like he took a kind of a boneheaded penalty as well. So like that one I kind of understood, but he gets the goal. You mentioned he was active, but you know, for a player who is very sharp on the detail size of the game, that one was, the goal was very puzzling. Why he doesn't just stay committed through the entire sequence there. Because he knows how to battle. He knows to be in those spots.
And, you know, somebody texted in and said that wasn't on him. That's on Mancini as well. I think, you know, Mancini, if you watch that play, Mancini does kind of vacate a little bit, but Ratu's with him the whole time.
Yeah.
And then he just stops skating. And if you see, they're kind of jousting together and just don't, especially when a guy leaves, you can say, this to me is experience stuff, but my point being, when you have young guys in the lineup, which is fine, these are the things that are going to happen. And maybe that's a silver lining down the stretch here with games that don't really matter, that they get these reps and hopefully learn from them.
Yeah, you can't do 50% on that play because earlier on that play, he is up ice. He actually gets back into the play to a certain extent. You're right, he jostles a little bit with Olofsson and then a little bit of glide in that game where you don't have body position the guy, but you're right behind him. So either you got to commit or you can't, right? Like, and at this point, he couldn't.
Yeah.
But he got back into the play, but the most important part of the ice was vacated. You can say Mancini. I look at that, and I think it's Ratu. He's just got to lean in a little bit more. Maybe stick a shoulder into Olofsson, get level
skate
with him.
Honestly, just skate
just
with
skate
him.
Just and with him. Just give him a little shoulder, knock him off balance.
Yeah, I think at that point they'd be fine on it. Final thing here, Randy, before we let you go, and this comes up, Vikingstad and others are bringing it up, and we've been talking about this too. When do you get to the point where you shut guys down? Chris Maple Ridge mentions Quinn Hughes, -9 his last six games, and we talked about he doesn't look like he's himself. And, you know, heading into the game, we know they're not going to give up quite yet, even though it looks like it's pretty close. But I mentioned, if you lose one of these games on the weekend, you have to face reality here, and I don't know if it makes sense to throw Quinn Hughes out there, especially on these two road games. Hey, I get it. You may be fans, you home fans. You want to give them the best lineup possible. But these two games, I mean, you got to sit somebody. Yeah. You know what? And to me, it's not even about you have to give these guys a chance to play. Like, whether Lekker Mäki gets one or two extra games or not, it's not going to change his trajectory. But in terms of just saving guys.
Yeah,
like especially you watch Quinn, he doesn't look right.
He doesn't, but you know, I was in that scrum where he said I'm 100%, right? Like the player is going to say that. Rick Tocchet, until there's an E next to the Vancouver Canucks, I think you're going to see these guys wanting to go out there because in the end, if you're the captain of this team, we know how Quinn's wired. And I'm with you, Sat. I think, you know, you want to get the younger guys a look, and if these guys are nursing injuries, you want to make sure that they're able to just chill out, maybe relax a little bit, and nurse those injuries. But the fact of the matter is, for the same reasons we praise hockey players to play through anything, this is also a trait on the other side where until there's that E next to their name, they're going to try to go 100 miles per hour. And I expect until that happens, I don't expect too much to change.
You mentioned one letter about the E. I'll mention another letter with the C, right?
Like, yeah.
He's got that one on his jersey. Is the captain going to be the one to say, hey if you guys go compete the rest of the way and see if you can drag this in until that E goes up there. He's going to be out there.
Again,
logically, I totally get it. Sat, you're right. Protect the guy. I understand. And at the end of the day, someone's got to go up to Quinn Hughes and be like, hey, we're taking you out of the lineup. And you're going to see how the captain responds. And I think he's like, not a chance.
Yeah.
Not a chance. And so that's how the decision's going to get made.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been a frustrating season. Somebody says, you know, Sat talked about how you can't take out veterans. Why not? They've done nothing to earn their playing time. This team has been terrible all year. Why should Lekker Mäki come out? I get the sentiment, but, like, look at the fours we're talking about here. Are you taking – okay. So Besser and Suter are pending free agents, right?
Yeah.
They want to play because every goal and point they get – Bluger probably not coming out of the lineup because they don't have enough centers, right? So he probably stays into the lineup. Dakota Joshua's trying to regain his game heading into next year, so there's value in him trying to play these games, right? Kiefer Schur was trying to go towards 20 goals. He's had a good season.
And he is an absolute – like, we talk about Quinn Hughes not leaving the ice. Mm-hmm. Kiefer Sherwood, you'd have to drag him off the ice if you didn't want him to play, right?
Yeah,
like, he's wired a different way.
And Jake DeBrusque, you know, people can have different opinions on him, but he's got 24 goals. Doesn't look like he's injured. And they don't just shut guys down who aren't injured. Like, that doesn't happen, right? So the question comes down to, do you think Drew O'Connor deserves to be in the lineup or not, veteran-wise? That's what it comes down to, conversation-wise, right? Now, I would imagine there is a veteran – maybe Connor Garland, who's dealing with something. And again, maybe you shut those guys down. I think we're getting close to that point, and I want to see that happen just out of the health side of it. But when we're talking about the veterans that have to come out, like, who you take? Drew O'Connor, okay, mention him. He signed a two-year deal, $2.5 million. Has he played poorly?
We're not in that room, but that is a very difficult conversation to have if you are not eliminated from playoff contention. Like, for anybody to go up to a player and say, hey, man, what do you think about taking the night off? Like, players don't want that conversation. So, you know that, Bick, you know that as well. So until that happens, I don't see that happening whatsoever. These guys, even if it's a 1% chance, we can talk about them missing the playoffs. We can do all of that. Until it's mathematically impossible for them to make the playoffs, they're not going to think that way. That's why there's some of the best athletes on the planet, right? So I get that. You want to see the young kids. It will happen, whether it's the final two games of the season.
Well, they had five young kids, but the thing is,
there
are five rookies in the lineup tonight.
Lekker Mäki will get his games.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's two games, whether it's one game, whether it's four games, he's going to get in. But pulling out the veterans, I don't think that's a conversation just until they're eliminated.
Plus, I don't want to break up the Abbotsford Canucks right now. The 13 in a row. Are you kidding me? You start taking veterans out. You got to pull someone up from the AHL. That team is on a heater.
13 in a row, man. And
Manny Malhotra is probably like, hey, stop messing up my chemistry. We got 13 going here.
Or maybe it's good luck. Every guy that comes up, they get two extra wins out of it. Randeep, great stuff as always, calling the game. And we look forward to chatting with you on Tuesday when the Canucks go on a quick two-game road trip starting off in Dallas against the Stars.
Quinn Hughes is a culture setter. We got to start a new culture up here with the mic situation, guys. I'm not sure what's going on back-to-back games. No, I'm joking.
We'll figure it out. That's Randeep Janda, getting his digs in. It's all good.
Yes.
And that was your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Sport. Rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. And keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, on that point, like, I do think a guy like Garland looks a bit beat up. I'm just not sure we're at the point yet where the team's going to sit these guys out. And like I said, I like to see, you know, guys who are injured take a day. Maybe you're a loss away from getting there, or maybe we see it here on a road trip. But all in all, we knew the season's pretty much over as far as your playoff hopes go, and I don't think there was any real sense in trying to pretend otherwise after yet another loss.
They're out of state right now. Max points, 93. Minnesota's at 91. Vancouver's going to play on Tuesday. That's going to be your last moment there against Dallas. If you're able to pick up a win, you stay alive. But we're talking about Tuesday and Wednesday here, kind of being the moment of certainty of what your situation is. And after that, do you start to make the decision here of Colorado, Minnesota, San Jose, Vegas? We're going to see a lot of fresh faces in that scenario.
Yeah, we certainly are. And, you know, people are fired up on the text inbox, and I can understand why. Rispinder in Surrey says, despite all that, Ratu should be a lock for the fourth C next year. I like what I see from him. There's more good than bad. And I don't disagree with that. I think we have seen more good than bad from him this season. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bick?
650 into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one, actually, we read that one from Corey. Jay from North Delta. So glad they hung on to all the UFAs for a playoff push. Did Vegas shut down Randeep's mic too? That is from Brandon in Poco. Chokes for 60. Stu says this offseason may be the most important time in Canucks management history to see where this franchise is heading. Completely outplayed by an NHL team. Canucks basically a really good AHL team. Nothing more right now.
Wow. Yeah. You know, fans are not feeling too optimistic right now at the very least. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit more of them as the show goes on here. We'll break down the goals. We'll get to the head coach's thoughts, player reaction, and a lot more from you as well on the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More of the Canucks Central Postgame show is coming up next after a 3-2 loss against Vegas at Rogers Arena on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Behind the goal to Petrangelo near side. Now to center for Wild Bill Carlson. Right wing to the Vancouver line. Forced wide by Quinn Hughes. Carlson center to front. They score! All alone in the slot was Victor Olofsson. And he beats Kevin Lankinen on a clean shooting chance right down the pipe. It's 3-2 Vegas with 3:14 left in the third.
And this is a great play down the right wing by William Carlson. He shields the puck, protects it perfectly, and then makes a backhand pass as he goes around the net. And Victor Olofsson, the Swede who's having a great bounce back season this year, finds the inside of the ice and he beats Atu Ratu to the spot in front of the blue paint and ends up beating Kevin Lankinen to make this a 3-2 game. That's just a little bit of puck watching maybe from the young center for Vancouver as Olofsson ends up getting the go-ahead goal here for Vegas.
Canucks go on to lose 3-2 against the Golden Knights at Rogers Arena, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We have a lot to get to here about the game. We'll hear from the Canucks head coach coming up in a few minutes. We'll hear from Canuck players, and we'll break down what happened here tonight between the Canucks and Golden Knights. And, you know, Seema has this question. This game, why did coach talk not challenge the goal where they appeared to be offside? Third best power play in the NHL. Just challenge, roll the dice. We need this win. We just seem to play it so safe all the time. On that play that Seema talks about, and I know other people texted in as well, my reaction was challenge too, but when you watch the replay, I think that back leg is being dragged, even though it's above the air. I think it would probably stand. I'm not sure that would have been overturned, and I'm usually all for being aggressive. It looked like he was dragging his back leg enough that it was probably going to stand.
I don't know if it's automatic. I will say, though, it's worth a challenge. And, like, what's your situation right now? It is pretty
just
hopeless.
Yeah.
The entire scope of everything right now is pretty hopeless. So roll the dice. Like, what's the lowest impact? Oh, no. It's 1-1 and we're on the PK. Your situation is like you're 8 points back here.
Well, they have the best power play and the Canucks are the third best PK.
Sure. Play to your strengths.
Yeah.
You have the third best PK. I didn't understand not challenging in that moment. I get it's close. It probably is a coin toss. But if you can chalk a goal off.
That was my reaction and watching it. I know I was sitting with Landon and his reaction was that was offside. He's like, that's onside.
I think it's a lot closer than people realize.
Yeah, like, because my reaction was, you got to challenge that. And he's like, no, if you look at this, and they slowed it down and watched all these different angles, like, this most likely won't be overturned. That's how they felt. And again, like, I get what you're saying at this point in the season, but one of those sticky points that people were texting in about and wondering if they should have done something differently. Donna North Fan says, Vegas in a different class. They're organized, always moving ahead, rarely standing still, whereas the Canucks simply aren't. The score was flattering to Vancouver and the K-Man of North Van. I don't disagree. I thought Lankinen, and we can quibble maybe with one of the goals or two of the goals or whatever, but if it wasn't for him, this game could have been out of hand, especially in the second half of this game. And when the Canucks were down 2-1, about before they tied things up, he was making a number of big saves to keep him in the game, too.
Early in the second period, I think, was probably his best stretch prior to the Ratu goal. He obviously was big in the third period, too, but the Canucks really weren't pushing back in the offensive zone at all, obviously. But that second period stretch, he was fantastic. Just the flurry. And they had multiple D-zone coverages where guys were wide open in front of the net. You know, Olofsson had a tip at the end of the first period where he's by himself in front of the net. And, you know, just multiple moments like that. Did William Karlsson have a chance as well late in the period?
And that was actually a really good play by Hronek to come back. It was a low to high pass from behind the goal line, and Hronek kind of stopped that from being a really good chance.
But yeah, Lankinen's not there. Or if he doesn't play like the way he did tonight, we're talking about a 6-2 kind of result.
Yeah, it's good to see, too, because Lankinen's game had really slipped the last little while, and to see him have a good performance against the Vegas Golden Knights from him, for his perspective, I thought was positive. John in West Kelowna, I hope we keep DPD long-term. He seems to get better every game. Now, not a big game minutes-wise for Elias Pettersson. He played, 11 minutes and 33 seconds. Not a ton. A bit surprised at how low the ice time was, but he does a lot of good things. And you know what I like about him? I mean, you know the physicality, obviously, but he doesn't let guys go by him without feeling his impact, whether it's he puts an elbow out, puts a shoulder out, puts a forearm out, you know, gives somebody a glove, or even, you know, stick somebody with some wood. Like, he gives somebody some sort of punishment when he comes to his vicinity, and I think that's something this Canucks blue line and the Canucks team in general lacks, and I think the fans really appreciate that, too.
And we're still talking about a pup here, right?
Yeah.
He's going to grow into his body, and you're going to see that physicality play, and you know, I just think of moments of like over the course of a 7-game series, something like that. All those little jabs, all those little shots, all those body blows, just stacking up. And he's a fun player to watch. And you see in moments like we saw him on a play where a few weeks ago, where he went in deep, tried to create an offensive chance, and wheeled behind the net to catch it back up on a 2-on-1, and got back into the play. And you just see how the speed. He really does have one-step quickness, and it's the few times he decides to open it up, it kind of dazzles because he can get up to 23-plus miles per hour, and he just powers past people, and I'm really excited to see how he grows, and I like the text there from, was it John?
Yeah.
I really hope we keep the guy long-term. You know, they're throwing a lot on his plate, too, putting him on the right side. He doesn't look out of place on that spot. It's... Something is there.
Well, yeah.
I'm just curious what it means long-term, too.
I agree with Dave in North Burnaby. DPD's a keeper. The kid has all the tools, including the skating and hockey IQ, to develop into an absolute monster for the Canucks' back end. And, you know, I brought this example up more in the past, and I think I'm seeing more of it. There are a lot of similarities to him and Matthias Olin and how they play. You know, their games, they're physical. They're not afraid of using their size. Still, I think Olin was very underrated skill-wise. We see Pettersson, he does show some skill, right? He scored the goal the other night. He's active when he has the puck on the blue line. He's not afraid of making a play. But are they going to hold on to him long-term? That's going to be the question here, right? We know this team, as we've been discussing tonight, compare the Canucks forward group to the Vegas Golden Knights forward group. There's a lot of ground the Canucks have to make up. And they're probably going to have to trade some or one of their top prospects.
If they intend to be big shoppers in the impact forward group, you've got to pull from a surplus. And the only surplus they have is on defense right now. And it is curious to me why they're playing him on the right side. Obviously, injuries help the situation to put him on that side. But this experiment is working, but it's not exactly something Rick Tocchet enjoys doing. He's talking at length about he wants lefties, righties. And so they're playing this player on the right side. Is it to add to the scouting report that he's capable of it? Do they look at the right side of the defense and say, hey, we might have more options here because he can play on the right side? Does it open up a transaction for a Hronek, knowing Willander's coming? You got Myers. There's DP who can play on the right side. It's just, if he's capable of playing on the right side, it has a lot of benefits to you. But the other surplus is we've got a lot of left-handed D-men, and you got Hughes a couple more years. You got Marcus Pettersson already locked up. The easiest thing, I think, maybe across the league right now is to find third-pairing left-handed D-men.
Yeah. Well, and I think, yeah, and when you have Pettersson and Hughes locked up, that's probably the area you have some surplus, or at least you feel you could sacrifice. But the way DPD's played, like, he looks like the more advanced of the young guys. And Villander hasn't gotten here yet, but he can play the right side. So it doesn't mean he will, and he might very well stay. And we're seeing a lot of texters and Canucks fans saying, sure, you guys got to move somebody, but don't move this guy. And I can't blame them for feeling that way. I mean,
he's making the argument difficult.
And he's also big. Like, okay, he's still very much a pup, to your point, and it's still going to take some time, and we don't quite know what he is yet. But one thing that we do know from his profile is that his profile is not rare in the NHL. A guy who's a defense-first D-man who moves well, is very physical, and can do some good things offensively. Like, there's very hard to find guys that can do the things that DPD can do, and especially the profile that he has. So, there's a reason why I think teams, anytime the Canucks ask about top players, he's a name that came up. And I think Canucks fans are growing more and more fond of him with each passing game. And another one tonight where fans are very excited with how he has performed. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Beck?
650 into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one, unsigned. On a positive note, I'm excited for the end-of-year press conferences. Management and ownership need to face the music. No letting them off easy. This team, as currently constructed, is not a playoff team. And if ownership wants to raise prices, they need to face difficult questions. I don't know if you'll expect to see ownership at end of season pressers.
Doesn't all. It has happened in the past. I don't know if this is going to be a year where you will hear from ownership after the season, but we know Canucks management is going to be facing questions, and they have faced questions every time they have faced the media. And, you know, ultimately it just comes down to, can you make the team better?
End of the day.
That's ultimately what it comes down to. And when we look at, you know, what's happened this season, there is a lot of blame to go around, and, you know, management bears responsibility from decisions they made and how they went about things and all that. And we look at players on the ice who underachieved. We talk about organizationally all the things that went wrong this year compared to what happened last year. So there's a lot of improvements that need and can and will hopefully happen here. And there will be a lot of questions, and we'll see if the answers satisfy the masses when we get to the end of the season. Anything else you want to get out here, Ben?
Jason from Langley, season's lost by disappearing at home in the third. Seriously, if they played a full 60 every night in front of their loyal fans, we'd be talking about how they overcame a tumultuous season rather than how disappointed fans are again. David, this team needs a huge overhaul this offseason. Lekaramäki, Willander, any prospects and picks should be made available for a win-now mentality. It's a young core already. Also, why isn't Tocchet playing Ratu more? He's been stellar. Can be a 15-20 goal-scoring third-line center. Work on the speed. And we are chilling about Ratu.
Yeah, I know Ratu is a player who had a great moment in this game. Obviously, things they can learn from as well. Being a young player like Ratu and the other guys are in the Canucks lineup, especially in a game tonight. Five of the rookies played. Atu Ratu, Max Sasson, Linus Karlsson, DPD, and Victor Mancini. Now, as far as what the head coach has to say about this game, let's go to the podium. Brought to you by Tiletown. Here is Rick Tocchet.
Well, Rick, obviously not the result you wanted tonight, but what did you think of the overall performance? Tight game, 2-2 against one of the top teams in the league in the third period?
Yeah, we hung in there. I mean, obviously we didn't have the puck enough the second half of the game. They controlled the play, so we were kind of hanging in there. So, you know, it's tough when you don't have the puck a lot, but, you know, there's some effort from a lot of guys out there.
What did you need to do more of to create more in the second half of the game?
Well, I think, you know, when we got it, obviously, you got to skate with a puck. You have to have confidence. you know, listen, we got some young guys in the lineup. We got guys from Abbotsford. We were playing a team like that. I thought those guys tried hard. I mean, you know, it's hard to play, but it just goes to show you there's a lot of work to be done.
What are your thoughts on Hoggy getting back in the lineup and bringing a lot of energy?
Yeah, it was good seeing him. Yeah, it was good. Typical Hoggy. I think he's been playing good hockey for us the last 5-6 weeks.
What did you see from Kevin Lankinen? I felt like he dialed in, I think, 27 saves in a row at one point during the game. What did you like from your goaltender?
He was solid. It's good to see him. I thought he was really solid tonight. Really good.
Mentioned Hoglander and skating the puck up ice. He was one of the players who seemed to be doing that, getting the zone entries with possession. What did you see from him in terms of transporting the puck and his defensive play, which seemed to be a step up from the beginning of the season?
From before, yeah. He's been working on a position to get a puck. You know, I think a lot of guys can learn from Hoggy. You know, you got to move your feet and know the puck's going to come to you before it's coming. I think that's where Hoggy's really improved. At the beginning of the year, I thought he wasn't seeing that. Now he's seeing it. He's coming back with speed. He's taking the puck in the middle. He's trying to make a play. The odd time he gets in trouble is when he doesn't have any pace and he tries to make a play. That's the only time he has in trouble. But for the most part, he's one of the guys that is really trying to get some speed to the neutral zone.
You get a goal from Atu Ratu. I don't know what your read is on their third goal, though. He's obviously in the vicinity when they score the goal. What did you think of his two-way game, his kind of complete game?
Yeah, you know, he's a work in progress. You know, he's a young kid. You know, he's going to make some mistakes, but he's also going to really – I like his effort, right? So you just got to keep working with him. This is a big summer for him of development. Got to keep developing him.
That line as a whole, I mean, they seem like they have something there.
Yeah.
And you know, what are you seeing from them? What are you seeing, how, let's say, Dakota, the way his game's progressed, what he can teach Atu, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you play, you know, that line, they've been pretty good together. Good forechecking line. You know, they got some puck possession stuff that they got to work with. But for most part, you know, if they can get on the forecheck, win some battles for us, that's why that line's put together. And, you know, they got to keep working with Rats.
And just on the maybe review, I mean, you didn't challenge the goal. What did you see on the potential?
We have one angle, and then Dylan, and then after, thank God we didn't challenge it. It wouldn't have been offside. So, I think there was just one angle. I could have, at that point, I could have called a timeout. Maybe if we got a couple more angles, but from the angles that we got, it was onside.
So. Speaking of video reviews, what's going through your mind when Vegas challenges for goalie interference?
Yeah, no, I think it's it has to be clear cut. I think that's they've told us, the coaches, at the beginning of the year. It's got to be clear cut. I don't know if that was clear cut. You know, it was kind of flip a coinish, and when that happens, they're going to always decide with the goal. That's from my experience that I was been told.
At the beginning, speaking to us tonight, you talked about confidence. How difficult is it to come by confidence when you're in the position you're in at this moment?
Well, confidence is something you don't buy at a store. You work at it every day. You know, adversity, how you handle adversity. It builds confidence too. If you can handle adversity, you should be a confident guy. So I'm always big in that. You just can't just turn on confidence. You build that. You build it with your preparation, with practice habits, with your summer training. That's and then when you're in these type of games, you know, Vegas' defense, if you watch them in their breakouts, they're really confident. They're kind of, they're big guys. They're not scared, and I think we can learn from that. Even for the younger guys to understand, how much they're going to have to develop into that. And that's why Mancini or Petey, those guys are trending, because they got that kind of body. Now they just got to work on the mental part of it, you know, the slowing the game down when you get the puck, things like that. So this is a good game for those guys to play and to watch their deep play. And, this is big for their development, really big.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their three locations and talk to their in-house design consultants, or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, obviously talked about the big difference between the Canucks and the Vegas Golden Knights, something we started the show talking about, and said, you know, Canucks, you know, need a lot a lot needs to be done to play against an opponent like the Vegas Golden Knights. And it's kind of been about, you know, the young guys from this point on and how they've fared. And he said a lot of good things about Mancini and DPD and mentioned Aratu. They liked Aratu and, you know, some good, some bad. And mentioned a big offseason of development.
Big summer is back.
Big, but I think that's the case for every single one of these young guys. You know, it's, you know, even with DPD, you've seen some, seen some really nice things, but he's still playing sheltered minutes generally. You look at Mancini, same thing. It's nice to show a little bit in this, but for them to be able to seize a bigger opportunity and a bigger moment next year, they have to get better. They have to get stronger, have to get quicker. So all these guys, especially these young guys, all these rookies, they all need a big offseason. So I'm not sure that's just something that applies to Atu Ratu, but you know, as we discussed, like, you saw some good, you saw some bad, and that's par for the course when we're talking about young players like these guys.
I like what he said at the end, too, about you know, Vegas defense. They're big guys, but they're confident on the puck, and it, referencing Mancini and Elias Pettersson, they're trending because they have that kind of body, but the last bit of slowing the game down when you have the puck, and it's a good game for these guys to be in, to play in, I would say Mancini in particular, again, I think there's a lot to like. But you do see kind of like an overactive player when he does get the puck, and, you know, playing with Quinn Hughes today and having to be out there against some good players in the Vegas Golden Knights, it did feel at times like trying to do too much. And we talked pregame. Like, he's got obvious traits that are very tantalizing just to mold and shape into something that could be really strong. It's just about settling a little bit. But, well, again, we'll see what it looks like in the summer and in training camp. But I did feel like there was just overdoing it at times for Mancini, even though there's good moments too, because he's got the ability to take a puck on a rush and do a net drive and get a backhand off. It just, there's other moments where he maybe skates himself into trouble, has to turn back, and now Vegas gets to recollect and now start pressuring you and makes it more challenging.
Yeah, but things hopefully that they can advance. But even you look at the guys on Vegas' blue line, it's not like they all hit the ground running in the NHL. A couple of them did. Like, you know, for instance, like, even Hanifin had some tough moments. He got traded a couple times. You know, there are questions about, you know, is Hanifin as good as people think he is? And you look at him now and you see the way he's played. Shea Theodore, so questions about him early in his career. And just go through a list of guys.
Excellent player.
But it's one of those things, like, you know, it takes time for these guys to get to the level they need to get to. And it's been very positive seeing what guys like Mancini and DPD have done, but also reminder that, you know, the journey to become a legitimate top four defenseman can take some time, and it may have some peaks and valleys. So don't get discouraged if you see these guys struggle at times. It's just part of that process of getting and becoming a better NHL defenseman. So we'll see ultimately what's in store for those guys. He did talk about the non-challenge for offside. Robin Victoria asks, why would they only have one angle? He said they only had a couple angles, and what happens is the camera crews and the TV crews turn things around only so quickly. So you only, so think of it as,
wait, hang on. Did he say they only had one angle?
No, a couple angles of it. The angles that we had is what he said.
Oh, okay. I interpreted that as there was one angle that they felt that it was onside.
He mentioned there was one angle that was offside. But the question, he said at the time we only had a couple angles. And based on those angles, and then he said there was one angle that showed clearly offside.
Okay.
He said, thank God we didn't challenge it
because
it would have, you know, been onside is what he mentioned. But so they have to make a decision within seconds. And in that time frame, usually you only get a couple of camera angles. There isn't enough time to get you four or five different looks on a goal by the time you have to make a decision. So that's why they only have so much information at the time of a challenge. And they felt like based on the looks they got, that they weren't going to win the challenge. And then there was an angle they saw that they thought for sure was going to have the goal be onside. But so, I think that's how they felt.
And still think worth the challenge.
You know, but if it's offside, I don't think they're wrong. Watching it over again, I think they were right at not challenging it. But Bick wants to live cavalier. I get it.
It was just so close. It was so close.
Yeah, but it's close. But it's close, and he's kind of dragging the leg, and it usually just goes with the play, right? I'm not sure there's enough to overturn. Now, Ken in North Van says, when I hear people say this team is not a playoff team as currently assembled, please remind them that there are only two reasons we're not. EP40, not showing up, and Demko being hurt. We would be playoff bound if not for this. It's a fair point, but also the reality is teams have injuries, and good teams find ways to withstand injuries. And you know, listen, you can only have so many, and you hit a critical mass, mm-hmm. right? But if you go through, and we talked about this, you have to be careful looking at Colorado. They have a lot of injuries this year, but Gabe Landeskog hasn't played. That counts as, you know, one guy who hasn't been there. And you mm-hmm. go through a list of players, some teams, and like, for instance, St. Louis, they haven't had Torey Krug all year, and he's had his struggles. So he counts as not being there, but we knew before yeah. this season he wasn't going to play, for instance, right? So you have to be careful looking at the man games lost. But there have been a lot of contenders, like Dallas too, that have lost a lot of players, and they still found a way to be good. And that ultimately comes down to having more talent. The Canucks don't have enough high-end talent to withstand injuries. And especially that was magnified after the JT Miller trade. So it ultimately comes down to needing more talent because injuries are going to be a part of life. And your best players at times are going to go down. And you're going to have to find ways to overcome that. And the Canucks just don't have enough as currently assembled to overcome major injuries.
Also, like the Demko one... You've lived that reality before. Like, he's picked up injuries.
This one was even longer, though. He hasn't been out this much in a season, but right? Like, he missed pretty much the whole...
Expecting a fully healthy season from Thatcher Demko, I feel, like is a big ask nowadays.
I know, but he's had 23 starts this year. 23. Like, sure, give me 40 yeah. starts, right? Like, I get that. But 23.
But I'm in a situation where I bake in that you're going to miss time from Thatcher Demko now.
I get it. But, like, 23 is, like, he's going to finish the year with, what, 25, 26 starts? Like, not even a third of the season? Mm-hmm. Maybe a third of the
Pettersson
season?
The Pettersson one, like, I don't know. I hope there's a 15-series doc one day about the Pettersson from 2024 All-Star to the end of season 2025 at some day, just to understand, like what happened here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Especially if there's a return to form next season. What happened?
Yeah. What if there's not? I mean, I'd rather have that conundrum to deal with than the one that does not return him to form. I'd rather be dealing with, like, what happened for you to go there and come back
yes.
than, like, you not coming back. But none of it really looks all that promising. I get it. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll take your phone calls on the other side as well, 604-280-0650 on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hoglander gets it again, right corner to the left circle. Marcus Pettersson snaps right on. Stopped by Hill. Rebound in front. Hugh Suter was there, couldn't jam it home. Hill was swimming in the crease. But the Canucks couldn't get it on target. Now Besser into the slot. Suter turns and fires. Stopped by Hill. Rebound. They score. Niels Hoglander. Back into the lineup. He cashes in less than 5 minutes into the first. It's 1-0 Canucks.
Hoglander shot out of a cannon to start this game in his return from the injury and just does a good job of sticking with it.
Yeah, it was good seeing him. Yeah, it was good. Typical hockey. I think he's been playing good hockey for us the last 5-6 weeks.
Canucks head coach Rick talking happy with Niels Hoglander's play and now has 8 points in his last 9 games. His 7th goal of the campaign, came back and played well in his return from injury. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment after a 3-2 loss against the Vegas Golden Knights. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of reaction on text inbox, as always. This one says, the goal shouldn't be to be a playoff team. It should be to be a contender. Well, of course. But you have to build towards being a contender, and the Canucks went from being a borderline contender to being a bubble team and now have a lot of work to do to get themselves back to being a contender. And the question is, can they turn that around in a year's time? Do they need more? And with the big question about Quinn Hughes long-term also looming over all of this. But, yeah, obviously you want this team to be more than just a playoff team, and right now they need a lot of work to get there. And before we go to the phone boards, Bick, what else are you seeing on the text inbox?
650-650, my girlfriend and I went to 6 home games this year. Not a single win. Hopes were high after last season, but I have learned my lesson. I will have to temper my expectations going into next year as they now stand 16, 15, and 7 on home ice. Very, very tough to see a victory this year. So tough one for that unsigned texter has been to one of the 22 losses so far on home ice this year. Is it time to question Rick Tocchet's bizarre decisions throughout this year? Two defensemen on the power play in 2025, benching JT Miller in a game earlier this year. Pettersson, JT issues, Garland consistently playing on power play one, baffling decision of Juulsen and Forbert in the lineup. And on and on and on.
Forbert. Why is Forbert's been one of the best penalty killers in the league this year?
He's been strong. He's been strong. I think there are real things to evaluate about Rick Tocchet. Some in-game decision-making. Is there opportunities to get offensive players more offensive zones?
Yeah.
All this stuff. But I think the overall evaluation and pros and cons, I think you come out in the positive.
Yeah, I mean, so on the defense part, we can talk about the forwards, and again, like they had rookies in the lineup. It's not like they don't have those guys in the lineup. But, you know, this notion that Noah Juulsen or Derek Forbert, like, who is Noah Juulsen playing ahead of? Erik Brännström, who's been traded three times this year? And didn't even get a chance with New York? Isn't getting really a look with the Sabres either? Like, we're talking about Erik Brännström? And Forbert's been fine. Okay, but I get the other guys. It's fine. Like, I understand that. And, you know, as far as benching JT, I don't think benching JT was what led to the issues with Pettersson and JT. I think goes well beyond that. And I'm not sure exactly what happened. None of us really know the truth of how it all unfolded, but I don't think it was because of the head coach benching JT Miller necessarily.
We talked about Philip Peronik as well earlier, and Karn the Plumber texts in, hey, guys, what do you think of Peronik's trade value is around the NHL? That contract is looking like a steal. No? That one is coming in from Karn the Plumber. So again, just to illustrate it, it's $7.25 million for Philip Peronik in the first year of a deal. It's an eight-year deal, $58 million total money. He does have a no-movement clause that kicks in this year. As far as potential value, somewhere in the range of 1, 2, and 3. First, second, and third. Figure out who fits into what slot, but you know, classic pick player and a prospect kind of scenario.
Yeah.
That type of range. You can figure out who fits in one spot, but that would probably be the range.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, could you do a one-for-one for a higher-end center
sure.
with a different team or something you can explore? You have options.
But that style of value.
Yes,
right?
But to your point and the point that texters have been making, too, is the solution to the Canucks' issues up front could come from the Canucks' blue line in one way, in one form or another, whether it's a young player getting traded, a prospect getting traded, a veteran getting traded. I mean, these options are all available to the Canucks this offseason, and we'll see ultimately what they end up doing. We'll take some more of your texts as the show goes on here, but let's go to the phone boards. Let's get our friend Jake from Langley on the air. Jake, always great hearing from you, pal. What are your thoughts here after a 3-2 loss against Vegas?
So the last caller, their last texter said that 0-6 going to the Canucks games.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah,
that's fine. I'll take those tickets off their hand if they don't want to go. That's no problem. I'm 3-0 this year, so I have no issue with that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Operation Quinn Hughes, and Operation Quinn Hughes is basically you have to get this specifically this offseason, because by next offseason, you've got to have an idea if you're going to be trading him or not. And that would be just devastating for the Vancouver Canucks. You're not going to let him go for free. There's no way you can let a player like that go for free. So this offseason, you have to do everything in your power to get Quinn Hughes to stay. So what does that mean? Well, first of all, you have to go talk to Quinn. What does he want to do? What is it going to take? I'm sure they've already talked to him many, many times. So then the obvious second part is you got to improve the roster. Well, what do we need? We need forwards, right? And we have defensemen that we could probably trade to get those forwards. We have a decent amount of cap. That's probably what's going to happen this offseason. Now, the biggest issue here is the perception of what to do about the difference between going for it now and then thinking about the future. Because the obvious plan is if you want to keep Quinn Hughes, and the biggest and most valuable piece you have is a guy like Tom Welander. Honestly, it's Tom Welander. Are you willing to trade a guy like Tom Welander to get that centerpiece and that first rounder to get that centerpiece to really, really make a move this offseason to keep Quinn Hughes, make him happy, because I think we're going to need to win at least two playoff rounds next year to get Quinn to stay. That's my personal opinion. So the real question this offseason is all going to come down to, and I'm sure you guys are going to talk about this at length, is do we trade not only, like, we talked about, like, DPD and stuff like that, which would be crappy, but do we go out and we just go all in and trade a guy like Willander and maybe even more to shore up that entire offseason? And that is the big question. So I don't know what you guys would do there, but that's basically what we're going to be that's the whole point of the whole offseason this year. That's the only thing that matters. Thanks, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, Jake, as always. And hey, listen, you guys have listened to me enough to know that I'm not afraid of trading anybody as long as you get the right pieces back, especially young pieces that fit long-term. And outside of Quinn, I'm not sure there's a player I'm afraid of moving in the right deal. They have options, like you mentioned. Could they consider Verlander? You mentioned DPD. He's played well on the right side when he's had the chance. Mancini, you know, somebody texted and said, hey, Hughes and Mancini, according to the game score, have struggled the last two games. And how much of that is Hughes and Mancini or whatever, but has shown some signs? You could if you wanted to.
But he independently, I mean, both DPD and Mancini independently are not getting you the piece that you really want up front.
No, they're not. Not alone.
Yeah.
Verlander could, because he's considered probably one of the, what, top 50 prospects in the NHL right now?
Yeah, maybe even higher.
You know, maybe depending on who you ask, right? He's very, very well thought of, but he's also very well thought of organizationally. Mm-hmm. And I think the Canucks might be willing to move one of these players like I've talked about, but are they actually willing to move one of, like, their best prospects, mm-hmm. like the number one guy?
Man,
like, you know, and
this offseason is
high stakes.
Because here's the thing.
Because I'm all for doing whatever you can to make the team better. But if you do that and it doesn't quite hit, and then the Quinn thing doesn't work out, like that's a tough bullet to waste.
All right, so let's just quickly rank the assets here. Let's just say 2025 first round pick, Willander, Lekkomäki, DPD. What's the most valuable of that group there? If there's another piece you want to throw in there?
I'd probably say Willander 1, Lekkomäki 2,
the first round pick 3
over DPD.
Is DPD getting you a first round pick in a trade?
In this year's draft, depending on where you pick, but maybe not the 15th pick, 13th pick, right? Yeah. So you say,
you think he's worth a first rounder?
A late first rounder could be. Like, honestly, like, so this is why, like, he fits into that. There's a big three prospect now because teams are, I've heard teams are very high on DPD.
Yeah.
Very high on DPD.
High on him. I would say, like, second to me. If he's worth a first rounder, man.
I think he's worth more than a second. I think he's worth more than a second.
Okay, so is there a difference between first-round value and first-round pick? Is he a second in something rather than a first-round
pick?
Sure,
I mean, how you want to piece it together, sure. But
I think the first-rounder is probably more valuable.
Depends where. Like, if you're picking, like, I'd rather have DPD than, say, pick 25 in this year's draft.
No, their first-rounder this year.
Yeah, their first-rounder, yes. Yeah, I'm saying, I'm talking about first-round value. Depends on where in the first round. Top 5th. In this year's draft, like we talked about the other night, there's, like, a top 16. And then there's a massive fall off, and there's like a top 5, and then there's a pretty big 6. Mm-hmm. And the second tier is still a pretty big drop off, but like it falls off a cliff entirely. So it depends on the draft that you're talking about. But yeah, I mean, those are your 4 best assets. And if you're not trading Verlander or Lekkomäki, you might have to piece together 2 of those assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what it comes down to here. But I think organizationally, Villander's not untouchable, but I think him and Lekkomäki are the two guys they really want to build on. I think what's going to be a really tough discussion for them is going to be DPD. And what stares them in the face is the certainty. Well, you don't have certainty on Quinn yet, but you have Marcus Pettersson signed long-term. You have Kudryavtsev coming. You have Soraminiu. Even if you love DPD, like, you look at the numbers and say, that's our area of strength. Like, he might be the guy that makes the most sense. And based on how our listeners feel about DPD, I don't think there might be agreement on that, but this is going to be the summer, to Jake's point, this will be the summer of very tough decisions. Very tough decisions. And if you want to get appreciably better quickly, you're going to have to sacrifice something of your future.
And especially appreciably better in very important spots, like top 6 centers. And given what happens with Elias Pettersson, you might have to be shopping for multiple.
Yeah. Honestly, and I get the sentiment too. New West Nick says this Canucks team is in a decades-long retool. I'm not trading any prospects to be mediocre. can you convince Quinn to stay here without trading anybody? Could you sell him on the plan? Does he see enough good things from these young guys and from your plan and from organizational stability, so to speak, to be like, you know what, I'm going to hitch my wagon to this because I believe in what we're doing here?
I don't necessarily think the do-nothing plan is a bad one. Just say, look, you wouldn't go to Quinn Hughes this summer and be like, hey, we got this great idea. We're going to do nothing. It'd be hard to sell them on spec. Just say, don't worry about it, like, everything around us. You might just have to eat it and say, yeah, we got some ideas. We'll see if they come off. And getting him to believe in you is going to have to take the season of winning and say, see, look, we were right. Next off season. Because the do-nothing plan is don't trade a first-rounder, don't trade the prospects, see how they develop over the year. And if you're right, it's going to be a lot easier to convince Quinn Hughes a year from now to see, look at the growth of those guys. But to sell him on spec on the idea of, like, hey, trust in prospects, that's a hard sell to any player.
So which risk do you think management is more willing to take? The one where they're aggressive and put it in their own hands? Or the one where they say, let's roll the dice and see what happens here?
It's
internally
always easier to do the second one.
To roll the dice?
Just to say, hey, look, we're trying.
It is easier, but here's the thing about that. Young players take so long to develop. And right now, you know what it is? Like, all these guys are like unused credit cards. You haven't started charging the credit card yet, and now you look at the bill, you're like, I don't know, was it worth it? The bill's coming due. You know, like
this analogy is hitting a little too close to home.
All I'm saying is, like, you feel really good about something until you've seen the cost of it.
But
you know, and I think right now it's really easy to be so excited about all these young guys and feel so good about their futures, and you think that they're all going to hit.
Correct.
But like, development is not linear, and all the guys we like this year could take a big step back next year, and they might be better in the future. But to me, on young players, to bet the house on your young guys taking a big step next year, that's very risky.
I'm just saying the do-nothing plan has some merit.
Yeah.
Just say, we don't have a move. We it's risky to trade first-round picks. It's risky to trade prospects.
Well, you know,
and you're like, I don't know what to do.
I think you're better to do nothing than a desperate move.
Yes.
But we'll see what happens. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of them on the other side on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. We'll hear from Canucks players plus hopefully iMac on the postgame show on Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show
on the official home of the Canucks,
Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
To the far corner for Garland. Bumps it back to Hughes. Chased to the line by Riley Smith. Now to the left wing. Half wall for Jake DeBrus. Side of the goal. Garland in front. One-time chance for Shooter. He's robbed by Aiden Hill. An unbelievable glove hand save from the Vegas netminder. And it's still 2-2.
An absolute beauty from the BC native Aiden Hill. Hughes Suter finds the soft area. Great quick pass by Connor Garland. Little touch pass. And this one is going straight into the left corner behind Aiden Hill, but not on his watch. What a great little play. And he flashes the leather, adds a little mustard to it after to let everybody in the building know he still has the puck.
Nils Höglander opens up the scoring for the Canucks, but it is not enough. Canucks lose 3-2 against the Vegas Golden Knights, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Sat and Bick on Sportsnet 650. A lot of reaction on a text inbox, 650-650. Dino says, Hirose last year supports the point that young players may not take the steps that you want to see them take. And we saw Hirose a couple of years ago looking like very promising, and that's fallen off. Even Cole McWard. Now, I don't think Cole McWard has fallen off, but went from being the guy, the next guy in line, and now there's been some guys who have passed him, and he played well tonight for Abbotsford.
Wait, was he the guy?
Well, he was the right on the – he made the team at training camp last year. Wasn't he the prospect defenseman? Like, who was ahead of him defensively last year?
Yeah, but I don't know if there was ever like a he's the future type conversation.
Oh, there was a lot of fans thought like Cole McWard was going to be a player for this team. He might still be, but you know, I wouldn't say Cole McWard hype, but there was a lot of discussion about, hey, Cole McWard could be a really good player. Like, he's our best defensive prospect. That was a thing before, like, Verlander's been in college. Before they got DP to come over last year.
I've chosen to forget those times.
When did DP to come over last year? It was towards the end of the year, right? He wasn't here. Mancini just got traded here. Kudryavtsev's playing his first year, right? Like, it was McWard, it was Hirose, and it was Brisebois before the concussion, and Jet Wu. Like, these were the guys.
Yeah. Yes. They were the only ones around.
Yes.
I don't know if the caliber was like.
No, I don't agree.
We feel great about this idea.
Oh, I don't disagree with that, but
that's what I'm saying.
But my point being, a lot of fans felt excited about Hirose and McWard. They were.
I do remember the Hirose era.
Yeah. Even McWard in training camp alongside Quinn, you know, was getting some hype. You know, just take some time with young guys. That's all. All right. We heard the call coming in. Nils Höglander opens up the scoring, and this all begins, Bick, on the shift after a good play by Brock Besser off the rush, and his shot ends up missing the net. And sometimes when that happens, it's a play killer, but it wasn't in this instance. And the Canucks kept the pressure on until they finally broke through with Nils Höglander potting the goal.
Yeah, good energy from Höglander all around, because he actually had a play where he gave the puck away to Jack Eichel in the defensive zone, is able to get it back, and Brock Besser ends up having this rush shot from the left flank that just misses. Höglander's on the puck in that corner, in the far right corner, finds Marcus Pettersson a nice diagonal. His shot is saved, and a clear attempt is also chopped as a save by Marcus Pettersson to keep it in the zone. The play I really like here is Brock Besser. He gets a puck on the left wall, and he skates past Dorofeev. He's got Höglander in the corner below the line if he wants it, but he kind of looks him off, skates past Dorofeev, creates a new angle, and Höglander, recognizing that he's not getting the puck, doesn't just be static and wait, gets to the front of the net, rotates inside, and as that pass comes into Piyu Suru, does that nice little spinning shot we've seen him do from just inside the hash marks and between the dot, gets this rebound, and Höglander, having gone to the front of the net now, gets this rebound to put it in.
Yeah, good play from Nils Höglander. Effective game from him tonight. Helps the Canucks get the lead, but it is the Vegas Golden Knights answering Ivan Barbashev, making a nice blue move. And this happens after the Canucks had a pretty good chance of their own. Kiefer Sherwood almost puts the puck in. The puck ends up going out of the zone, and then that's when Mark Stone just draws defenders towards him, goes towards the middle, and then Barbashev does the rest.
He just plays at his own speed, Mark Stone.
Yeah.
And it works all of the time. Puck gets flipped out of the zone. And after that sequence that you're talking about where Sherwood spilled over Aiden Hill, and Stone just collects in the neutral zone, one strong push around Dakota Joshua, draws in Filip Hronek, and then fits this pass between Hronek's stick and Joshua's back pressure of the stick right into a streaking Barbashev, who maybe not was offside. And he's streaking to the zone, and Lankin is pushing hard to left or right, and Barbashev is working the other way, and he's able to slot that in.
I love Barbashev's game. Direct player, just goes power move straight to the net, and a nice move to put the puck past Kevin Lankinen. Then Nicholas Roy gets a fortuitous bounce off Victor Mancini's skate, but the rebound off the initial shot in question, you didn't like that from Lankinen?
I didn't think it was a great rebound. I forget who the Vegas Golden Knight player was coming into the play.
It was Olofsson. No.
Was it Olofsson? It was...
No, actually, no.
It may have been Kolesar. Either way, there was a Golden Knight player coming right into that rebound.
And Mancini was actually facing that player. Mancini was playing it right, because like, he was facing, playing the man, and ready to, you know, go towards him on the pass, and the puck just goes and ends up going off his heel and in.
Yeah, I just think there's a rebound waiting to be scored. If
I think Mancini's in a decent position on it, like, cause he's facing the Vegas player. He turns, like, he's actively defending and ends up going.
Is that Hanifin? I think it's Hanifin.
Yeah,
I think that's going right to Hanifin's stick if it doesn't hit Mancini's heel and bounce back in the net. Either way, bad luck. The way the goal went in, it goes off Mancini. But nevertheless, they're up 2-1.
Yeah, so that's a 2-1 goal, and the Canucks were able to tie the game up at 2. It was Atu Ratu in the second period, collecting a rebound from Filip Hronek. Kiefer Sherwood gets the other assist, and a lengthy review to ensure that this one stood.
Yeah, Joshua does a nice play here. Breaks it up in the neutral zone. He and Ratu combine for the entry, and there's a bit of a scramble and a loose puck that Sherwood picks up, and he gets a diagonal pass back to Hronek. And, you know, we've talked about this, too, about Ratu replacing himself. as a point shot is about to come. He's net side on this, and he gets net front as Hronek is shooting. He's not just waiting there for a tip for, as where his feet are stuck. He's moving to new space and changing where defenders are angling towards him and trying to find open space. And as he does, comes to the top of the crease, maybe some contact, rebounds there for off Aiden Hill. And he talked with us as well in the second intermission, saying it was part of the scout looking for these rebound opportunities and didn't have much left to do after just knocking that one through.
Yeah.
And it was challenged for interference, but was not the case.
A length review, and Rick Tockett said those ones are 50-50, but they will stand when they're that close.
I thought it was going to be a good goal.
I thought it wasn't going to stand because Ratu makes contact on the first shot, and I wondered if they're going to say it prevented him from cleanly stopping that one and cleanly icing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a close call.
Based on the conversations that we've heard here recently from the GM meetings as well, and I know Frank Cervelli has mentioned this on your show, Elliot Friedman's talked about this a lot, about the points that were made. You know, he goes into the crease, but he doesn't go into Hill. And I think he pulls up just enough in an effort to get out. But also, there's contact on the glove side. And it looks like that shot comes in on the blocker side or at the pad level for Aiden Hill. So is the contact preventing Hill making the save? And I don't think it is. And Ratu's eyes are on the puck the whole time. He's not trying to go into Aiden Hill. I think there's just a lot of check marks to say, you know, he's not deliberately and intentionally interfering with Aiden Hill.
No, and the goal does stand. So 2-2 was the score line at that moment. But the Vegas Golden Knights get the game winner in the third period with just over 3 minutes to go. Victor Olofsson potting in a pass from William Karlsson, who goes around, beats Quinn Hughes. And, you know, we talked about Otto Ratu earlier on this play, kind of losing Olofsson, not skating with him. And there was some talk about did Mancini make the right play or not. Well, Mancini, like, he gets the puck.
It looks like it goes off his skate.
It goes off his skate. Like, so as Karlsson beats Hughes around the goal, so Mancini, because Karlsson has beat Hughes, he goes towards the post, which is a play you have to make so you prevent the guy from doing a wraparound or be able to come in front. So I think Mancini makes the right play, and the way he goes off his skate perfectly falls onto Olofsson's stick. Like, if it doesn't go off his skate, he probably misses Olofsson because he probably goes right through the middle of the ice. But a bit of a fortuitous bounce, but to me, here's Ratu. If you're skating with your guy, tie up his stick, and that goal's not happening.
Especially with Quinn Hughes chasing behind the net, Mancini coming to that post as well. Someone's got to stay in front of the net. You're the center. That's your responsibility.
And here's where, like, this is where you have rules, right? Like, one of the rules is he was a forward that came down. So I understand maybe he was thinking, I have to protect the rail. I got to stop here by the hash marks and protect the middle because Mancini's there. Here's where I have to stop. But that's where you read and react, and you see, well, Hughes is behind the net. Mancini's committing to go across. I have to follow across because I have to close this play out. And if I'm, maybe I'm 2 or 3 feet closer towards my goal, but at least I'm protecting the middle as opposed to being a bit higher up. And these, to me, are things that I can understand what he was thinking, maybe. I was like, hey, I have to stay here and protect this rail. But you follow your guy and just and go through the motion first.
The rail, for me, is a base position.
Yeah.
It's
you actively defend from that
get
spot.
Get to your home and then locate the next threat and switches off for a minute. You know, Quinn doesn't really fight through Karlsson at all. He's able to get the entry and wheels around the net and just gets that pass in front of Victor Olofsson.
Yeah, and that was a game-winning goal, and that leads us to the three stars for this hockey game. And the third star of the game is Kevin Lankinen for the Vancouver Canucks. He faced 35 shots, made 32 saves, and the best he's looked in a number of starts here. He is a third star of this game. And the second star of the game is Victor Olofsson gets the game-winning goal. You know, had some good moments, but you get the game winner. You find yourself as a star. He's the second star of the game. And the first star of the game is William Karlsson. He got the assist on the game-winning goal and just really strong defensively all over the place. I thought he was their best forward tonight for the Vegas Golden Knights, William Karlsson.
It's like nothing happens when he's on the ice. He just nullifies the other team, and then you're just stuck there like, what happened tonight? And William Karlsson was like, yeah, don't worry about it. I got an assist tonight on the game-winning goal, and I shut your best players down. No big deal.
It took 20 face-offs, won 10 of them, you know, and I thought Jack Eichel was pretty solid, but it wasn't like a great game from his standards. And we know how strong he can be. I like Ivan Barbashev, but William Karlsson, strong game. And those are the three stars of this game for the Vancouver Canucks, and that, or for the game between the Canucks and the Vegas Golden Knights, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Angry Otter Liquor, and presented by Angry Otter Liquor's three stars, powered by a lineup of locally brewed beers. And, you know, we've given you some analysis we heard from Canucks fans. Before we get to IMAC, let's, and hopefully IMAC makes it over, let's get the thoughts of some Canuck players. We'll start things off with the Canucks star tonight, Kevin Lankinen, and here he is post-game talking about the game and ultimately what went wrong.
Yeah, disappointing result. Obviously, that's on top of my head right now. I think we battled hard. It's a good team we played against, but not the result we wanted.
Kevin, that's a Vegas team that came out pretty strong in the third period, and you held them out for a long time there. What can you take from that moving forward here?
Yeah, I think we just got to keep building, keep believing here. Try to do my best, just make sure I compete my ass off, just go as hard as I can, and try to help the team win. And unfortunately, that wasn't enough tonight.
That is Kevin Lankinen, and you know, pretty short to the point. Yeah, you know, he wants to win more than anything else.
I love the unspoken words and
Honestly, sounds speak louder than words very often, right? Yeah. The exasperation from Kevin Lankinen. So short and sweet from Kevin Lankinen. Wanted to make sure you got that answer from him. And let's get to another Canuck player. Nils Höglander returned to the lineup, not triumphantly, but he did get on the scoreboard, open up the scoring with his seventh goal of the campaign. And here he is post-game talking about getting the goal and also losing the game ultimately against the Vegas Golden Knights.
It's always nice to play again. It sucks to be out, so felt good to be on the ice again.
How about the performance in the group tonight? Again, not the result you were looking for, but, you know, tied hockey game in the third period against the top team in the division.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty even game at the end there. We let it in, so I don't know. It's not the best game, but, I mean, pretty good.
For you individually, you were producing before you went out. What did it mean to you to contribute right away coming back in?
Yeah, I mean, it felt good to get the goal there in the first period, so feels good to get it over and just keep going from this. But I mean, yeah.
Why shift on your goal? You guys had a chance right before that, and you guys have sustained it. I mean, that must have been a good feeling that that's the kind of hockey you guys want to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first period was pretty good. We got some good forechecks and good looks, so. Yeah, that's the goal. We're going to score.
And what do you think went wrong in the third? Because you guys seem to have a lot of control through two periods.
Hard to say, but I mean, I think there was pressure. It was pretty hard. And we let in the goal at the end there. That was tough. So, yeah.
Why was it so hard to get shots in the third? What are either they doing or you guys not doing?
Felt like we didn't really push that hard. Then they scored, and it was pretty hard to come back.
That is Nils Höglander after the game, and excited to be back in the lineup. I know the coach talked about how he was raring to go and wanted to get back in and finally got a chance to get in here against Vegas tonight. But overall, pretty strong performance from him.
Was probably the Canucks' best skater tonight. Lankinen probably the best player overall, but Höglander probably the best skater.
Yeah, had the Canucks won, he would have been one of the stars. That's kind of the way we viewed it. Brandon Impoco, like Kevin Lankinen, Sat also should have taken a long pause before calling Bick that other name.
What, Dan Riccio?
Well, that was a nice name. I don't know. Which one was worse?
You sure about that?
Which one's you sure about that? And Dino says, I can't stop thinking about hyped D prospects that did not work out. Rathbone, Olajuwon come to mind. Stopping now, trying very hard not to move on to the forwards. I will not think about Virtanen. No, I won't.
You can get hyped about the next D prospect. We've been talking about it. Mance makes some dance.
Hey, that was yesterday afternoon.
That was Friday and Saturday. Saturday. Canuck Central. There it is. Mance makes some dance.
I gotta perfect the shoulder shrug,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, you gotta work on it. Killing time until iMac gets over, yeah. And that man is now gracing us with his presence. Walking in, strolling in, I would say. We call him the triple threat for a reason. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
With a strong quarter zip game today. That is an A-plus effort there.
Thank you, Vic. If you think that was strolling, Sad, I'll have you know I can move far slower than that. In fact, I need to catch my breath after running over.
I know. Hey, listen, you made an all-star effort to get over here. It's not easy. It's like, well, how far would you say it? It's like 100 meters? It's probably more than 100 meters.
Oh, just stop.
It's also a curved run, though, right?
Yeah, it's curved.
The problem
it's like turn out of 200. Yeah. You know?
The problem is the game went too long. I think that review lasted half an hour. So
yes.
I didn't realize how long the game was until I left the Canucks dressing room, and I think it was 10 after 10.
Right.
Because normally it would be about 10 minutes to 10,
yes.
Ideally.
Did you get your piece done?
I did.
Oh, very
good. I have to.
You have to. Yeah,
there's no choice in this. It's not optional, Sat.
Yeah, no, we know.
Here's the thing about the newspaper business, which, of course, I'm not in the newspaper business, but I'm still in the writing business. There's a deadline. It's not flexible, typically. Well, it shouldn't be.
It's no.
At journalism school, we had a course called Daily Writing, and you were given a set of facts, and then the mandate was to put them in some sensible order,
right,
and write a straight news story. And
that sounds fun.
If you got any of the fundamental facts wrong, you got 0 out of 10. And if you were a minute late after deadline,
you got 0.
You got 0 out of 10.
Because it doesn't go to print.
Yeah. It instilled in young reporters the value of getting finished on time.
Or as we call fear.
Yes. That too.
All
that
right.
Too. I got to say, like in the old, I know I'm sounding like an old guy now, but when I started, it was sort of the twilight of the golden age for newspapers.
Right.
Right. It's now well past midnight. It's the middle of the night for newspapers now. But the old Vancouver Sun building on Granville Street, the press was in the ground floor. And our newsroom was on the top floor. And when the press started to roll, you could feel the building shaking. And at that point, it was like, man, I hope I got it all right. I hope I got all the details right. And, you know, if it was on time, it's going to be on that press. It's now rumbling like this giant beast in the basement. It was great. It was awesome.
Well, it's slightly different nowadays. You know,
of course, we reporters do tend to be nerdy.
Yes. And
hence the analytics movement.
Yes. Well, we're going to leave that for now. I'm not going to – you know what? Yeah, we'll leave it at that. As far as the
– I've used up half the time.
We have. Right, so. But, well, I mean, as far as the game goes –
is anyone complaining that I'm not talking about ice cream?
No, nobody yet. Nobody yet.
All right. As far as the game goes, carry on. That's a nice pocket square, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It's just white, but thank you.
No, but did you mean to fold it?
Oh. Yeah, I just kind of scruffle it.
That's
how you do it. See how quickly I can make it? It's not bad, huh?
Nobody can watch this.
Bick, take lessons.
Yeah. How to scrunch together a pocket square as quickly as possible. But as far as the game goes.
I think I FaceTime Sat last time I needed to use a pocket square. I was like, hey, how do you do this? I see you do it all the time.
Like, make it into a rose. But. Are we learning something from these games? Because I know, like, from our perspective, you know, we were covering the games. We were trying to find the interesting talking points. Or we're trying to find things that can
How's
translate.
How's that going?
Well, you know, it's a struggle at times. But because we've seen enough end of seasons to know that as promising as some things can be, you can't just assume that they're going to pick up where they left off next year. So even the young guys, it's promising. But how often have we seen young guys show well, and then the next year they go through struggles? And it's a journey to get there. And I think... You know, I don't want to overstate the impact these young guys have made, but it's just one of those things. Like, I think we're all kind of struggling to find out what the truth is in the games we're watching right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think overall the young guys and especially the player development program with this organization has been a good story this year. And, you know, it seems like everything has been has been awful, and at times it's hard to see the good stuff. But the fact that they have so many players who have had contributions at this level, at least some, while clearly have seen an uptick in their development by spending most of the time or a large part of the season in the American Hockey League, is a very good thing. And, you know, they've got five guys in their lineup right now who have spent, I think it's the majority of this season, but certainly large chunks of this season in the American Hockey League. And so with those guys, you want to see that promise. Like, I agree that we make the mistake, and this market especially makes the mistake, where people get too excited too soon about young players, and if they have a good week, we think that means they're going to have a fantastic career. Sometimes all they need is a good shift, and we think they're going to, you know, be something. But it's still important to see the good stuff, right? That, I mean, you have to see that. You expect to see the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, really, that's the reality. You expect to see their flaws when they come to the National Hockey League, because this is the best league in the world. But you have to see the good stuff in order to keep sort of investing in that development, because if you're lucky, you can coach out the bad stuff, but a lot of the good stuff is harder to teach. So you like the good stuff, and most of these guys have in some way shown good stuff. And tonight, Atu Rati, as an example, showed both.
Yeah.
Right. He was really good on the second goal, the way he battled to the front of the net, battled for the puck. And then he wasn't so good on the winning goal, when he let Olofsson skate by him. Like, he basically reached out his stick and sort of water skied briefly and then just let him go. Now, Ratu, when we talked to him after the game, mentioned how he was a little unsure about, you know, should he have stayed with him or should he not, because technically that isn't really supposed to be his guy. You know, he's worried about the defenseman coming in behind him if he's coming in.
And maybe that's why he wanted to maybe stay a little bit higher, kind of off the rail, so he could go up or down.
I think he was in between.
Yeah.
I think he was in between. But I think in that position, you see the danger of the play in front of you, because it was all in front of him. You could see Carlson was going wide on Hughes and was going to have a chance to make a play with the puck. He could see that Mancini, who probably should have been higher in the slot and looking, at least shoulder checking to see if Olofsson was coming, was instead kind of puck watching, was watching Hughes chase Carlson and had nobody checked. I think in that position you have to, you know, read the play and make a stronger play and just not let Olofsson get to the net. And Dakota Joshua was slow getting back on a counterattack. So, but this is the stuff that happens. This is kind of what you expect. But again, it's nice to see the good stuff, because without the good stuff, like, what's the point? Like, it's, you know, you draft players, you develop them, and you believe in them for a reason. You need to have the idea of a return on all that. And when you see the good stuff, that hints at the return. But, you know, you just need to see so much more, you know, consistency, so much more, you know, these guys are just learning. Basically, you know, what is the American Hockey League? I'm trying to think the equivalent in your schooling. Would that be, I don't even think it's junior high. I think you're still in elementary school.
Yeah, comparatively,
when you're in the
yeah.
American Hockey League. And this is now, you know, you're in high school. And if you become an elite player, you go to university and you get a PhD. I don't know where I'm going with this, but there's a lot of learning that still has to be done for guys when they first arrive at this level.
That analogy needed a daily writing class.
I know. Yeah. Daily writing and shorthand were the two most valuable
classes. Yeah, you've explained shorthand before, and I'm like blown away every single time.
You know that they dropped shorthand from my alma mater's curriculum.
Because it's all...
Because, no, too many people... This was like long before... well, not long before, I guess a little bit before internet. And I know everyone's got their jokes now about how old I am and, you know, was it in black and white and what have you. Did we take streetcars to school, to class? But they dropped it from the curriculum because too many people failed it. And it was like all the journalism courses, you had to pass them all. Like, you couldn't.
Right.
There was no, you could fail something else, an elective or whatever, but you had to pass all the journalism courses, and that was mandatory, and there were so many people failing shorthand that they just eliminated it. And of course, I've hardly used it in the last 15 years because when the internet did come along, we started posting everything and people would post videos. It became a lot more important that you get every word correct. Mm-hmm. Right. So it kind of
plus recorders probably changed everything.
Yeah. It used to be the showstopper when I would go to elementary schools and talk about my job and talk about journalism. I would ask for a volunteer and they would come up and I would interview them and I would write their answers on the chalkboard. And their minds, their little minds, were just exploding because it was just hieroglyphics
just
and stuff.
Like, what is this?
And then I would read back what it all said. Simpler time. They also were really impressed that I had a laptop computer.
Yeah, actually, back in those days, especially. All right, well, that brings us to...
Was it called a Macintosh back then?
It was called an iMac.
Oh, okay.
I think Radio Shack was the first.
Yeah.
Widely used computer by journalists. It was just a word processor.
Yeah, it's funny
the black, was it called, was it liquid crystal? Was it like the black? You probably don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
So the screens weren't really backlit, so it was hard to see them, and the type was kind of this dark. Dark on dark, and it was really hard to see what they said.
Technology has come a long way.
Unbelievable.
This text says iMac segment summary, printing presses, pocket squares, good stuff and bad stuff. So we got a bit of everything. iMac, great stuff as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca.
People want to listen to things unrelated to hockey.
100%.
That's what I've learned, especially because if they're still with us, they've been listening to you guys for an hour and a half. Yeah. Go on and on and on and on about the game.
Almost 2 hours,
Just try to bring something different.
A little bit different. That's what makes you the triple threat. Different ways of approaching things. But we appreciate your time as always. And we'll only have five more of these to go, two on the road. Are you going on the road trip or not?
I'm going on the road trip, yes. Okay. I'll be in Dallas and Denver. And I believe, if my math is correct, the Canucks have to win on Tuesday. No, I'm being serious. Yeah. Like, I know we've said they have
it's
to win
over.
Out. But I think literally. The
true must win.
And then Minnesota plays on Wednesday, if I saw the schedule right. Yes. So
And Minnesota's two wins away from clinching anyway. So almost
one win?
Or maybe one Canucks lost now, right? So one
because the tiebreaker.
Yeah, they're one win away. So almost there.
Thank you, Bick. I was worried I was going to have to get rewrite at the Sportsnet desk.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end.
But it's already deadline. The press machine's already gone.
Yeah,
it's a little different with the internet. I got to say my mental health – in so many ways has been challenged by the internet and technology, but it is great when I go to bed knowing that if I've made a mistake, someone smarter than me in Toronto is going to see it before most people in Vancouver even wake up. Whereas when you made a mistake in newspapers and you woke up at 3 in the morning, there was a permanence. It was like it was carved in stone on a hillside for everyone to see for eternity.
Yeah, so in some ways it has helped.
Oh, is that the rumble right there?
Is that the rumble of the press? It sounds like it.
I wish you guys. I could talk for hours about that, the rumble of the press.
All right, we got to get out.
Sounds like a drag race.
A fleet, like hundreds of specially designed trucks carrying only newspapers lined up outside the building.
They look like budget trucks.
To take them away.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we got to get out. Fast Eddie Gregory, thanks for everything. Lena doing a great job. And Lena back on Canucks Brunch tomorrow. Is that what's going on? I know Josh Elliott Wolf is sick or whatever. So you're doing it alone?
No show.
No, because of Josh?
No, not because of Josh, but kind of because of Josh.
Your co-host letting you down.
Yes, he is already on week 3. But we'll be back on Tuesday.
All right, look forward to that. Thanks to Bick Nazar. I'm Satyar Shah. Make sure to read Ian McIntyre's latest on sportsnet.ca. And thank you all for listening, participating on the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.